Hello, good morning. It's Kelly Lovely, and welcome to the Bookends Cafe, a podcast for professional women and men who perhaps have ever wondered what the world looks like through my eyes or through the eyes of my learned colleague, Judith Leacock. Well, what's so good about our eyes, I hear you say? Nothing really. We just felt as though we've got something to say. We've got opinions on everything. And today we want to take you all into the realms of mental health. I've got two quotes for us. The first quote I like, depression. It's not a result of weakness, but as perhaps as a result of being strong for too long.
Very true.
And another one that's been doing the rounds is suicide. The word caught your attention, didn't it? The truth is suicide catches everybody's attention. It's the action leading up to it that goes unnoticed. And how are you this morning?
I am very well, thank you very much. And as is my usual job, which you give me every time, I have to bring the food. And I've brought today something that I know you personally have never tried, and actually I'm sure a lot of people listening haven't tried either. It's a fig pie. Figs at the moment are in season, and they're very ripe and they're very tasty, but they're not used a great deal in Australia. And this recipe is actually from the UK, again, from my many years living over there, north of England mostly. And It was deemed to be, at the beginning of the season, figs were meant to be to give you a feeling of calmness. So they're perfect for today when we're going to be talking about mental health. So you're just munching away there. So what do you think of figs now?
I thought it initially tasted like apple pie. But the aftertaste is not apple.
That's right.
It's not too sweet.
No, they're not sweet at all, really. I mean, if you ate one, if you got one, it's very ripe and you eat it. It is a little bit sweeter than it is in this pie because the juice comes out of it. And, of course, baking it, the juice is extracted. But but they're not a particularly really sweet fruit. And, yeah, I've got very thin pastry so we don't overpower the figs. Yeah.
It's very nice. It's very... It's a granular. I can sort of feel the. Is it seeds?
It's got some little bits of sultana in it as well. You mix things with figs. They don't have such a powerful thing that you can leave them just on their own. So,
It's so very nice. Go. It's a very odd way to start Sunday, but I'll as you
You'll
said,
soldier
I'll soldier on. Now I've got something for you. Our first little game today. Tell me from 1 to 7. Your favourite days of the week?
Just 7 my favourite days of the week. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
That is not what I was expecting. From 1 to 7, favourite colours of the rainbow?
Yellow, blue, red, purple, orange is that colour of the rainbow? I've run out of colours. I don't know the spectrum.
Now, the one that you will know, from 1 to 7, best countries in the world.
Well, Australia's number one, of course, because it is. The United Kingdom, Belgium, Italy, France, US, and I have to put Russia in there because I absolutely love my holiday in Russia.
Terrific. Awesome.
Yeah, I think good questions.
So we're going to talk today about mental health, but I wanted to actually sort of drip feed the idea of mental health based upon, I guess, an experience that I had recently in a workplace. And it was a result of having worked with someone for quite a while who, in a very positive and proactive, almost celebratory way, mentioned that he had had a lifelong experience with depression and anxiety, had had suicidal thoughts, and needed to take time out from the workplace for a while. So I guess in terms of his own mental health first aid management, very, very proactive. And I must say the workplace and the relationship, based upon how honest he was with his own symptoms, was very, very proactive. And I wanted to ask you, Judith, I suppose we've all had experiences potentially of mental health concerns in workplace that haven't gone so well. Do you think actually being proud or brave enough to have trust in your colleagues and trust in your mentors to be able to be open and honest about your symptom is a way to best handle the workplace when you know you are actually entering a phase of mental health concern?
I think that it's a really difficult situation that a lot of people, and I say a lot of people because it's true, there's a lot of research into it, have found in their own lives and in their own workplaces. And remember, mental health isn't the diagnosis of the schizophrenia or the, you know, the serious paranoia or whatever. It's simple depression. And I don't say that in any disparaging way, but it's a piece, an experience of depression, an experience of anxiety, a panic attack. And I have a colleague who had a single panic attack But that is a mental health condition. It's, yep. it's caused by the brain reacting to a particular situation in a particular way that's not a normal behaviour. So there is that, you know, element that we need to remember. It isn't a huge diagnosis. It's an experience of the person. The danger is, though, however, that because it has such an emotive connotation, if you end up with that label either on your medical record or on your workplace record, it will never be removed. And it has meaning, it has significance. If you go for a life insurance and you haven't, you've been to your GP and you have listed a mental health diagnosis, it will impact your ability to get life insurance and your premiums. It's a simple example, but it's a case in question. But when we're talking about the workplace, of course, if you get labelled as someone who is emotionally unstable because you have this mental health problem or possible problem, that again will remain with you, and every performance appraisal or every view of you by senior management will be coloured by this word or this language on your history. So for me, it's around, yes, you need to get help, but you need to decide exactly who you're going to discuss this with. It's not something for me that you sit in the canteen and you talk to people about. You need to be aware that you're discussing it because you need the person to assist you. So it has to be a person who can assist you to deal with it, and not just, you know, colleagues around a kitchen table or a staff room sharing, you know, a topic for conversation.
Yeah.
Because if you choose that person, it's either your mentor or your manager who's there to mentor you for a particular reason. They should actually have a very special skill as well, because to mentor people, one of the three main components of having emotional intelligence and being able to mentor someone is that you have empathy.
Mm.
So they will be able to listen to it in an empathic way and be able to reflect back to you what it is, and then together what is the way forward. So it is about choosing the right person. It is about the language you use and discussing it openly and honestly, but how it impacts you, not the whole psychological approach, because no one is skilled in that unless you happen to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but how it impacts you in that situation. So it's contextual.
Yep.
It isn't around how it impacts you with your husband or boyfriend or partner. It's how it impacts you in the workplace. Mm. So we need to contextualize it so we can plan properly. So the mentor or the coach or your manager can plan with you anything that needs to be changed, any support you might need, any particular area that they can send you to where you can get extra advice. Yeah. The firm may have an EAP, so they can send you there, which is completely confidential.
Yeah.
So it is around making sure that you yourself control the conversation, selecting the appropriate person, having the conversation in a way that is around its impact on you in your work and your future in that role, and what and who do you need to consult to get the help that you need, and a time frame.
Yeah.
So it will be monitored. You know, it's not just I'll tell you today and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, where do we need to go with this? Perhaps checking in maybe monthly on that particular issue connected to your performance. But for me, the selection of who you talk to or you know, even picking your coach or a mentor, if that's now what you feel you need, and sharing it with them, make sure you check them out as having the three central components of emotional intelligence: empathy, self-sufficiency, so in other words, they're perfectly comfortable in their own skin, and the ability to analyse and talk and reflect back to you.
Terrific. That's excellent. So some good takeaway there for listeners. But one of the experiences that I've had, which is probably someone who's, I reflect on, maybe not aware of their own mental health needs because they're a younger person or because they're new to a workplace. So the shock that comes along with recognising that there is actually someone who is slipping into some sort of mental health concerns or is dragging, unfortunately, towards suicide. One of the things I can probably encourage listeners is to actually, no matter what your workplace requires or no matter where you are, just with your own children, is the Mental Health First Aid course, which is a two-day course that St John's coordinates, is becoming rapidly actually a non-negotiable element of first aid management in workplaces. So it doesn't necessarily talk about, you know, splinting broken bones or you know, working through when things are being physically triaged. Yeah. It's actually just about recognising the signs and symptoms of people who might be slipping into depression or who might be sort of literally in that suicidal ideation. One of the things that I actually remember from my experience was just how confronting the mental health first aid training is in the idea of slipping into suicide, to the point where your first questions when someone does say, look, I think I'm going to take my own life or I'm going to commit suicide, your first reaction is to actually drag out of them. Look, you know, you don't try and change their trajectory. They are doing what they're doing. You actually need to drag out of them the how. How are you going to take your own life? And your role then is only then to stop the conversation or start dual processing, but actually try and find a means of stopping the how from actually happening. So someone said, I'm going to drive my car into a tree. Your role is to actually go and find their car keys and hide them. If they're saying, look, you know, I need to actually sort of go and get my guns, your role is to actually just hide all the guns, remove all the bullets. And it's pretty confronting.
Yeah, gosh, it would be. Yeah. I think that's a really fantastic course and everyone can do it. But I think the hardest part is when you're giving, as a manager, performance feedback to an employee and you are having to give them feedback that you are aware of a emotional and behavioural change in them that in your limited knowledge could indicate that there is a mental health issue.
Yeah.
And trying to confront them with it and face them with it and use the right words is probably the most challenging for any new or middle manager who's never actually thought about that part. Very good at the technical side, so ticking boxes about you can do this, you're, you know, technically capable, very good at this, even your report writing, so communication skills, tick, tick, tick. But then when it comes to the interpersonal, when it comes to the behavioural, when it comes to the attitudinal, we don't get any feedback at all, so they keep quiet.
So tell me about that. Say, if Judith, how would someone receive performance feedback? And I've probably, like yourself, you've had situations where people sort of get in front of you and for whatever reason they can't articulate why their interpersonal relationships have broken down, and maybe their gender prevents it, maybe their age is something that's never happened to them before. Can you start by telling how do you actually give performance feedback when you're actually recognising that someone doesn't know why they're in this situation? And then if someone who they don't know but they should, how do you give and receive performance feedback?
I think that when you get into that area of any sort of performance feedback or performance review, you literally turn the tables. So you're actually not telling them. You're actually saying to someone, tell me how, if you were filling in the performance review, tell me how you would evaluate your relationship with your team, your relationship with your manager. Tell me how you would, how do you see, how would you score, if it's a sort of a template document, how would you score yourself at this? And you get them to talk, because usually when you do that, when you actually get them to focus on themselves, they start to behave in the way that clearly demonstrates actually why there is an interpersonal. So they'll either get very defensive, they'll get aggressive, they will actually become very introverted and not want to talk at all. So, you know, they're actually demonstrating exactly what the issue is. So you don't ever have to challenge and you don't actually have to describe their behaviour. You get them to describe it and then you work on that description. So how they react, you then work with that. So if they become aggressive, it's, oh, I see, so that really obviously distressed you. Let's talk about why would that distress you? Because they've gotten angry about being asked to describe how they connect with their team or something. So you then work on what it is they're showing you to get them to see that they actually changed in that moment. They changed their behaviour. They became something that they weren't before. And that's what you're looking for, really. And that's usually the first sign, a breakdown in inverted commas, and I don't mean mental breakdown, but a breakdown in their ability to remain the person that they should be. They've drifted into the person that they've become because of some mental health issues, some problems, some pressure. And look, it can be as simple as working in ambiguity. People change their behaviour very distinctively when they're working in ambiguity and they become lost. And you know, Kelly, yourself, we've worked with people who are stuck. And although that's not a mental health issue, the behaviours and the change in their interpersonal relationships is exactly the same as someone who is experiencing a mental health problem. So you can work through them, but it's how you do it. Turn the tables and certainly don't in any way dictate to the person what it is you expect them to do. And the other thing, the only other piece of advice I give you, you never ever say to someone, pull yourself together.
That nice closed question.
That lovely pull yourself together.
Good comments there, because I know when you're actually providing sort of performance feedback or when you're sort of reacting to poor performance, you need to sort of be able to, and I mentioned the word dual process, you need to be able to also understand, well, what's normal Because, you know, if you start recognising that this isn't normal, you might need to start thinking, well, is there mental health conditions here? Is there? And the only way that you can actually is by flipping it around. Yes. You know, lovely open-ended questions about how things are potentially going at home.
Yes.
Potentially how things are going, you know, in different environments.
Yeah.
Because you do sometimes need to just flip it around.
Yeah.
And just sort of try and actually unpack whether there's anything else that's impacting on their ability to be successful, which a lot of probably Australian leaders may not feel comfortable with.
No, but for me, it is a bit like situational leadership.
Yep.
So in situational leadership, you create or you become the leader that's appropriate to the context or the situation, yep, in which you find yourself. So in this case, giving feedback to someone, it's situational guidance. So you actually, yep, have to take them to the different situations. Like, yep, you're saying, is it something from home? Is it something in the environment? Is it something in the structure that, yep, the business structure that is causing them, you, yep, know, some dilemma or ambiguity, yep, and they just can't cope? So, yeah, for me, it's creating a situational awareness,
mm,
and then connecting the dots. But, again, being very clear that you reflect each time with, yes, the person. You are not there to judge. You, yep, are not there to diagnose, and you are certainly not there to direct action. You are there to get them with you along a pathway that says, this is what they've identified. Yeah. We agree this is what's happening. This is the way we can possibly revert back, yeah, to where we were.
Yeah.
So moving forward, we can progress and develop, yeah, into the role or into the promotion even that yeah, they originally wanted. But they've got this sudden period where, yeah, it's all gone, yeah, belly up.
And I think two things in that. That's terrific sort of, you know, insight. The things that I sort of hear is just also the importance of complete confidentiality when it comes to that slippery slope around performance development, because that's really the only way that you're going to actually ever get to the situation where honesty and trust around mental health concerns or a lot of stuff going on outside of work is affecting a person's ability to work. And also just the need as leaders or as managers or even sometimes as friends just to remain educated on mental health. Stop, you know, putting people into the too hard basket,
yes,
get educated about these things.
And a little aside, I think what tends to happen too is, you know, the unconscious bias, I just don't like them. So, yeah, whatever they do,
yeah,
I mean, they could have a genuine problem,
yeah,
but I'm sitting there judging them for a performance review thing. I don't like them anyway.
Yep.
So, okay, he's a bit odd, behaves a bit strange, I'll tick that off, I don't like him.
Too hard basket.
Exactly. So, mm-hmm, we don't even do anything about, yeah, it at, yeah, all. That's, yeah, that's when it's really sad.
Yeah.
But like you say, confidentiality is so important. Mm. And it's confidentiality with a big C as opposed to a little C, because it's even that slip of the tongue. It's, yeah, even meeting them maybe later outside this and, you know, passing them in the corridor or going to the tea room, yeah, and actually just saying, oh, how was that problem with your wife?
Yeah.
You know, no. That's not the,
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
Yes, you're showing care, but you just talk to people normally, like, how's your day? Are you okay?
Yeah.
You don't actually ever mention anything that you have, mm, brought up in the,
yeah,
session.
Yeah.
And some people look, it's an accident, they didn't mean, yeah, to, but it can take everything back to the beginning.
Yeah.
So you just revert them,
yeah,
back to, that's it, close down,
yeah,
not telling you anymore, because you've actually revealed it in front of,
yeah,
possibly other people. So,
yeah,
you've,
yeah,
lost them then.
Yeah. For good. Yeah. And I think it's a good, I think you might have taught me once, a closed-ended question can only actually invite one binary response, yes,
yes,
or no, good or bad.
Yeah.
Happy or sad. Open-ended questions and actually establishing a repertoire of small talk open-ended questions, a necessary part of everybody's toolkit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. 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 Well, that was delicious. You haven't even touched yours. I've eaten all around. I've eaten all the pastry. I've eaten all the bits in the middle, and I've just got my last little bit. Look, we probably wanted to talk to you also about what we've been reading and what we've been watching, because we're sort of focusing a little bit about mental health. What I've been listening and what I've been watching is the Man Up series on ABC TV by Gus Warland, the Triple M radio announcer in Sydney. He's got a beautiful three-part episode around suicide and actually the importance of men to respect each other, care for each other, when, again, the simple signs and features of performance or people's personalities do change. And being a Australian blokey bloke, he's actually quite critical of that blokey macho culture when it comes to effectively dealing the challenges of suicide. So I encourage people to read that, watch that. The other one, I guess there's two. One that I've sort of watched twice now, and I encourage anybody who's got kids or who has friendships that they just value very, very much, well, every Australian, I think, should watch the series called You Can't Ask That, and there's a specific one where suicide attempt survivors, and then there's about 11 of them, just basically talk about their suicide attempts and all, I think, as a result of mental health concerns. The three takeaways that I actually have of these, of that You Can't Ask That marginalised Australian sort of ABC take, is these people are very, very normal. There's one particular man who just says, look, openly, life for me has always been hard. So it's very, very nice in that those mental health concerns and those attempts at suicide were just people who were very, very normal, but for whatever reason had just slipped. And this one particular fellow, I was in tears sort of listening, and he said, look, life has just been always hard for me. It's always been a struggle. Another fellow who was actually a fellow who, again, I got a bit upset for him. He was post-traumatic stress disorder, diagnosed very late as a result of, when he was 14, accidentally shooting his best mate on the farm. You know, and that back to that Gus Warland,
yeah,
trying to be a big Aussie bloke. And actually it was interesting to see actually in the bush how actually they've got a long way to go when it comes to actually people sort of with mental health concerns, because he was shunned by his footy mates.
Yeah.
He was shunned by his community. He was shunned by his family. And in the end he said, look, you know, it was only just actually a men's health group, and, you know, people just asking him, how's your head? Not a closed-ended question, open-ended question, how's your head? But actually got it through. And the last one was, I suppose, in my takeaways, was just actually how suicide and the thoughts of suicide is just so painful. It's just so painful for everybody. Some of the people that speak have got bittersweet experiences. Mm. They said they've been the better for it, but certainly it's just so easy for us to actually reach in and help because it's just so painful for all concerned.
But it is, though, a very well-hidden thing, though.
Yeah.
You know, I was working with a large number of adolescents, and in that period, the time that I was working with adolescents, there were 3 suicides, all of which were completely... So a complete shock.
Yeah.
No preparation, no forewarning, no behaviour change, no sign of struggle, A-grade students, popular, you know. So it is really hard because you don't know what's going on in people's heads, and it is around creating an environment where people feel supported.
Yeah.
And people who are successful need support. So I think people make an assumption that because you're doing well at something that you don't need anything, that you're okay and that you can cope. And I think in these particular adolescent incidents, it was that. They were straight-A students. There was never an issue. So nobody actually approached them in the way that you approach Miss Average or Miss Below Average.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the problem. We make huge assumptions that if people are good at something, then they're okay.
They can cope with everything.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they obviously couldn't.
Yeah. And that's a good one to finish up on. I suppose there's a few takeaways today. I hope you enjoyed our, I guess, a bit heavy sort of drip feed into mental health. Catch you on the other side.
See ya. Bye.